wanted to write down these stories to share with friends and close family, our kids. Travis has always had a dream of writing a book, and it just kind of morphed into that.
The times that we failed while hunting spoke more to education than any kind of a kill shot would.
It sounds super cliche, but backpacking has changed my life. I was driving at night, so I decided to stop in town, and I sat down and I was talking with this old timer. His viewpoint on it was just, it was so profound to me.
I laughed until I cried for 4 days straight. There's so many other things that make up a hunt that we don't talk about.
It contains a lot of those little strange novelty stories that rarely get communicated but are greatly enjoyed. I am so content. I'm the happiest I am all year long with nothing that I can't stuff in the backpack on my back.
Hey, this is Travis.
And this is Scott.
And hey, we're from Team Bad Decision.
And you're listening to Living Country in the City.
Y'all ready for your dose of flyover state spirit? Straight from the concrete jungle? Well, put down your latte and pull on your boots. It's time for Living Country in the City.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Hey, y'all, welcome to episode 105 of Living Country in the City. Just a reminder, as I've been telling you week after week, Living Country in the City will soon be rebranding to the Wild Initiative, so keep an eye out for that. Got some exciting stuff coming down the line with that rebrand. All right, y'all, on to today's episode. Today, I have Travis and Scott with Team Bad Decision. Y'all, I was introduced to these guys by my good friend Brittany. If y'all haven't heard of them, make sure you go follow them on Instagram. They have an incredible story to tell. They recently released a book that is a fantastic read, y'all. And these guys are a ton of fun to talk to. So I hope y'all enjoy episode 105 with Travis and Scott from Team Bad Decision.
All right, y'all, here we are, another episode of Living Country in the City. I am here with Travis and Scott from Team Bad Decision, which is a name I absolutely love because it speaks to my personal hunting experience. I'm not sure, guys, how much of my show you've checked out, but I have I have two solo episodes that I've done. Just that are just me talking. One's a recap of my hunt, but the one before that I did was entitled More Things Not to Do in the Backcountry. So the name Team Bad Decision definitely speaks to my soul. Guys, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast with me today.
Hey, no, thanks for having us on.
So want to start out with, just for each of you, maybe a little bit of background. How did you get introduced into hunting, the outdoors? How'd you get your start?
Well, you know, my start, it was pretty young. I was sitting around in a duck blind with my dad when I was, you know, three, 4 or 5 years old. And then we started doing a lot of upland hunting, all the way up through high school and stuff like that. I didn't really get into big game hunting until I was in my late teens, early 20s. And most of that stuff was like family friend camps, elk camps, and deer camps. It was a lot more beer drinking and back to camp by 11 a.m. watching satellite television than anything. But we had a little success, and that kind of stoked my fire. And then in 2013, I met Scott, and we started deciding that we wanted to hunt the backcountry, and we've been doing that ever since, almost exclusively, really. So
awesome. And Scott?
Yeah, for me, I didn't grow up hunting, so it was something I kind of took to as an adult. I kind of, like Travis, started out with friends and family on some front country hunts, and then I went on my first backcountry hunt in 2012. The next year I met Travis, and it was just
you know, we just kind of fell in together and we got along, worked good in the woods together and had a little success and then a long downturn of failure. And it's finally started to kind of come back around.
No, that's awesome. So this is a question I've asked, I think, once before on the podcast. And I've talked with a lot of people and I ask them this question in person. And I always find the answers, they're always so different and so interesting. And I bring it up because you mentioned, you know, front country and back country. What would you say your definition of what makes the back country for you? What's the difference? You know, you say back country, front country. What is the back country?
I think Travis and I have slightly different definitions on this, so we'll let him go first with his.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I kind of define it as somewhere where you're packing into, where you're getting away from the road, and you're not heading back to a truck camp at night. You're packing your ass into the backcountry and a couple miles and hunting from there. You know, I'm not sure exactly where Scott's definition changes, but we've had a couple different conversations because there's other places that you can pack back and pretty far, and that I don't think I would still consider that the backcountry. I mean, we like to get up into the alpine. We like to be in the high mountains, and that's kind of what at least I define as the backcountry for me.
So you'd say definitely backpacking in is a definition of the backcountry. You got to get in there. You're not driving in. And it leans a little bit more towards the alpine, the forest, the trees, the mountains. Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
What would you call the backcountry, Scott?
That definitely fits. But in addition to that, it's places that you can't drive into, places that you can't, you know, ride a four-wheeler into. Typically wilderness. You're not going to make it back to a base camp that night, that kind of thing. You know, you're going to be living off your back, or, I mean, you know, people get in there with stock as well, but essentially places you're not walking in and out of every morning and every night.
Somewhere where you have to pack whiskey instead of beer. That's probably the best.
That is perfect. That is perfect.
Oh, I love it. I actually been talking with Stillhouse Whiskey, funny enough. I should probably make them pay for a mention on the podcast or something. I don't know. But I just find their slogan is so incredibly clever that I have no problem mentioning it. It's an unbreakable spirit. And it is like, in my mind, if you're packing in whiskey, that's the whiskey you want. Because it comes in, basically, it looks like a paint thinner can. And it's tasty whiskey. And it is very unbreakable. But anyway, I digress. Unpaid promo there. That is just because I like the product. Anyway. That's always a question. I always just like hearing what people say. You know, it tends to always revolve around kind of those general themes of it's, you know, somewhere you have to work your way into. You know, most people think of it as the mountains and stuff like that. You know, I don't have when you say backcountry, I kind of have my mental picture. I wouldn't say I necessarily have a definition of that, but you know, it's always an interesting thing I like to hear. But so you guys meet, you have some success, you know, success, you have a lot of failure. When did the name Team Bad Decision come along?
We've been asked, I'm almost 100% positive it was in Colorado part two, right?
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah. I think it was on the second day of meat packing.
And we'd Scott had killed a bull like 8 miles in, and it was over like two ridges before we even off trail, before we even got back to the trail. And, we'd made a mention the previous year. We'd seen a huge bull in this basin, and we're like, man, it'd be a really bad decision to kill a bull in there. And so then we killed one in there the next year. And, so the name was kind of born as a joke, and we've kind of carried that mantra ever since. So.
Oh no, that's great. And I love that story that it has. It's, you know, it comes from somewhere, but it's not just like oh, you know, we just made a bunch of bad decisions. But it has like implications from 1 year to the next. And there's a real history behind it. So that's, you know, that's absolutely fantastic. And so was this before, was this specific trip what prompted, you know, so big surprise here. We're now we're talking about the book, the Team Bad Decision book. But was it this trip that kind of prompted the book, or was it, okay, we had this successful trip, we had a lot of these failures, and then kind of the book morphed into that? Like, how did the book come about, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, so like the naming trip, that was in 2015. So it was years later before we ever decided to do this project. And it didn't start as a book project in and of itself. It was kind of, we wanted to write down these stories to share with friends and close family, you know, our kids, while they were still fresh. And as the story started to come together, Travis has always had a dream of writing a book, and it just kind of morphed into that.
So you had this dream. When did how did it finally switch, just from writing down these stories? Like, what was the, was there any sort of defining moment that really took it from like, okay, we just want to share these stories, to like, hey, I think, you know, this needs to actually be a book.
I think it was, for me, when we started talking about it, I mean, we always kind of were like, oh, it's kind of a book. It's kind of a collection of stories or whatever. And as when Scott sent over, Scott's kind of, his memory is significantly better than mine. And I'm a little scatterbrained on occasion. So Scott sends me over this, this list, and it's all of our trips we've ever taken since we started together. And it was kind of cool as we looked at this list. I'm like, man, you know, I remember this, you know, I remember we screwed that up. Oh, we killed that bull. We got spare here. And before long, it kind of told a story. And then as we started writing it down, everything just linked together, and it became, I mean, it was, I mean, I think I wrote the whole book in 6 weeks, on the first draft. And it was pretty apparent right away that it was going to be something that was different than we originally anticipated. And something that we were pretty excited about. And then I think it was, we were waiting on editors mostly. That was the hardest part, was waiting on other people. But it was 5-6 months, I think, from start to finish when we got that book done. And it was, ended up pretty cool. So
I've got the book right here. And Team Bad Decision, An Evolutionary Tale in Backcountry Hunting. And, you know, we were talking earlier, and, you know, I kind of mentioned I got a digital version last week, I want to say, is when we started talking, and then got the book a couple days ago, and I just started in on it. Got through the prologue, and there's a lot of stuff that speaks to me in here. Stuff I've talked about, stuff I really identify with. But what you know, how would you describe what this book is about to someone? You know, you're presenting like, hey, you know, we wrote this book, and they're like, oh, what's it about? What would you tell them?
I've had people ask, well, you know, what's your book about? I'm like, it's about backcountry hunting. But if people want to probe, they really want to know what it's about. I mean, I would say it's a book on education of perseverance and being able to overcome obstacles that you face when hunting, and stuff that maybe, especially a lot of new hunters, they take a look on social media today, or they watch their favorite outdoor channel show, and they see guys that are filling tags, you know, in what appears to be a day and a half, and having no problem doing it. And that's just not the reality of the situation. And so I think it's important to portray what I consider to be a truth as in hunting, as opposed to some of the stuff that is portrayed today, which is a little bit edited and a little bit unrealistic, I think, for most people when they step out their front door.
You know, that's something I've talked about with a few people on the podcast. That's very important to me personally. And I think there's a bit of a move towards it, is authenticity and that holistic telling of the story. Because one, it's beneficial to to us for bringing new people into this hunting lifestyle. But it's also just beneficial for hunting in and of itself, because, you know, you think about how media is now versus how it used to be, where, you know, it used to be you would have to, you know, write in and send away for these VHS tapes that would come to you monthly or whatever it was, you know, Monster Bucks or this or that or the other. And I feel like now it's so readily available when all you have are those, that montage of kill shots and, you know, people getting it done immediately. It doesn't tell that picture. Whereas, you know, back in the day, people understood what went into hunting, versus now the audience has changed and, you know, we're trying to bring in and really reach out to a lot more people. You know, there's something and something else I'm really passionate about, and I hope I don't get in trouble for reading this couple sentences here from the book.
Knock yourself out.
This is one of my favorite parts. This is what really spoke to me. You know, in the previous paragraph, I alluded to the less successful trips as the ones that hold some of the most important lessons. I will readily admit that while writing about oneself, it is sometimes difficult to not gloss over, or at the very least, downplay the mistakes or errors that seem so obvious in retrospect. I will do my best to avoid this trap. I appreciate that so much, because like we were talking about, that authenticity is so lacking in a lot of big hunting media. That is one thing I promised myself from day one when I started, I guess, putting this out, was I'm like, I have to be 100% authentic. I'm not going to, when I screw up, I have to promote that just as much as when I'm successful. Hence what we were talking about earlier, a whole podcast entitled More Things Not to Do in the Backcountry. I appreciate that so much, because, you know, when you're trying to reach out to new people and they are not successful immediately, or they can't find an animal, they can't hit the center of that target with their bow, they can't figure out how to sight in their rifle correctly, and all they're used to seeing is kill shot and successful this and, you know, we're so badass that they're going to think they're not cut out for this. And that is so far from the truth. So, you know, just from that alone, I want to give you guys a huge kudos for being willing to share those stories. So with that, it sounds like, from kind of what I can see, it sounds like a lot of this book is actually more dedicated to the failures than to the successes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that we've got success as well. You know, because I think the success is it ended up being sweeter and more rewarding because of the failure. I mean, because we went through, you know, we went through the mistakes but I think that the times that we failed while hunting spoke more to education than any kind of a kill shot would. I mean, you don't learn as much about an animal. You don't learn about as much about what not to do in the future. And I don't think anything increases your chances of success more than learning from your own failures. And I mean, that's an old life lesson, right? But it really applies to hunting. And I think people sometimes forget that. And I think it's important to pass on the mistakes that I seem to have made more than Scott, in all truthfulness, but I think it's important to talk about those and so people can see that other people make mistakes and that you can learn from them and then be successful. So
what would you guys say, you know, what were some of the big learnings, you know, and I don't want to totally steal the thunder from anyone, to buy the book and learn the story, but what would you say are some of the big learnings from, you know, maybe the start of this journey to not the end, but to where we're at currently?
Gosh, I would have to say mental toughness. It took a while to realize that although you thought you were doing a good job and being tough on the mountain, it just, that's not a fact. Proficiency with a weapon, be it rifle or bow. You know, if we had been on the level that we're at currently, there'd definitely be a lot more animals on the wall. Sticking with the hunt to draw back to the mental toughness thing. You know, there's hunts that we really wish we could get back because we left too early. You know, we got to a mental breaking point and we packed it in.
For a million reasons. I mean,
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know. What else do you got, Trav?
As far as like lessons learned from our mistakes.
Yeah.
That's pretty, that kind of hits the hammer on the head of the nail there. Especially mental toughness. I mean, I think you said something there, Scott, that I haven't heard you really say before, but we thought we were tough at one point. And we did some tough stuff. I mean, we did things that were hard and stuff like that, but man, we were not as tough as we thought. And you have to learn how to do that. I mean, just like anything else, you got to learn how to persevere through stuff, and you got to experience, you know, 30 hours in the tent to know if you can do it or not. And then the next time you spend 30 hours in a tent, it's not nearly as bad as it was the first time, but just make sure we have extra whiskey.
There you go. Well, whiskey can definitely help build that mental toughness.
Well, you know, as far as I say we weren't tough, and I'm not talking about, you know, climbing big mountains and knocking out mileage and carrying heavy packs. It was being able to stay on the mountain for 4 days without seeing an animal. And then, you know, then weather rolling in. And now it's been more days with no animals. And you just got to stay.
I mean, I think our spring bear hunt we just were on, that's a pretty typical issue of having some serious weather and lack of game aversion. We were in an area where we could see, what would you say, 10 square miles?
I think it was nine.
Nine square miles in front of us of premier game area. I mean, this is premier deer, premier elk, and we were not seeing deer or elk first thing in the morning or right at night, and it was frustrating. But it was 90 plus degrees during the day in the middle of May, and everything was basically feeding all night and sleeping all day, and kind of like we ended up doing actually eventually. But you know, it was sometimes tough to even want to stay up there because you start second guessing yourself and you're like, you know, is this the right plan or should we move locations or do we not move locations? And I don't know if we have the answer or not. I mean, we've done both and been successful both ways, moving locations and being successful and then staying and sticking it out. I don't know. But like I said, it's a new learning experience every time we walk out the front door.
So, I mean, talking about mental toughness, you know, and really the importance of building that, do you maybe have, you kind of touched on a little bit there. Do you maybe have examples of when maybe one hunt that you guys went out on where you didn't really exercise and didn't really have that mental toughness and you feel like you really could have been successful if you had stuck it out? And then on the inverse, maybe talk about a time when you wanted to quit, but you guys stuck it out, and because of that, you were successful.
I'll take the second, Scott, if you take the first.
I'll take the first. So we had like 7 days planned for a high country deer hunt, and we packed into an area that we'd scouted all summer, and we'd had some bucks on camera, and I still hold that it was a good area. But the day we got up there, it was pretty hot. And I think we did some stupid shit, like skylining ourselves too much. And then we had to walk down in the basin to get some water. And we probably weren't stealthy enough. But then Mother Nature threw us a bone and threw us a 2-day storm. And instead of sticking it out the rest of the week, we went home. And I feel like that storm would have undid everything we screwed up with. You know, with noise and scent and presence. And if we would have just hunkered down and then finally waited for that thing to break and just, you know, snuck into a glassing location, I really feel like we could have had some success there.
Yeah, you had that.
Well, and snow was coming too on that trip.
Ooh.
And we left before the snow because the snow was supposed to be a foot of snow. And it was like, yeah, you know, maybe we should get out of here before the snow comes. And to kind of tack onto that too, we went back 2 years later to that same basin and went up to the exact same spot. We went down and through the basin, went up the other side. It snowed on us that night. And when we hiked out, there was multiple buck tracks coming through the bottom of that basin, exactly where we had been glassing and expecting deer to be 2 years earlier when we left. And so that was kind of, it was kind of a realization that we screwed up by bailing.
You had that storm hitting the reset button for you and you did not take advantage of it, but
no, exactly.
It's tough. I mean, weather sucks. I deal with weather actually pretty okay, but you know, just knowing you screwed up, honestly, that's one of the worst parts of that. I think the most difficult parts about developing mental toughness. It's not the times where you're like, okay, the weather sucks, I'm not seeing any animals. Those are bad. But the worst parts were that are hardest to stick out, I think, are when you know you screwed up. When you screwed something up and still being able to stick out through that, that I think is where it is the most difficult to stay mentally tough, because you're, the other stuff you can at least like chalk up to being like, I have no control over this. But when you screw up, I feel like it is probably the worst, most difficult part as far as it, when it comes to mental toughness.
Well, it's funny you say that. there's a lot of stories I think that we could tell of that where we've had some success after that. But you know, when you bring that up, that kind of reminds me of a perfect example of that. Is in 2017 we were on a spring bear hunt, and Scott had we had two tags for a spring bear unit, and the first guy had a tag that was with us. He killed a bear on the first day. And so they ended up leaving, and Scott and I continued to hunt, and we went back up further up the drainage, and Scott missed a bear. And it was a miscommunication on windage and probably a little unfamiliarity with my reticle. He was using, we had one rifle, and he was using my gun. And he missed the bear, and it was a dandy. And we packed him under a belt. It was beautiful in 75 degrees, clear bluebird skies at all the way till about 10 a.m. And then we had snow 2 hours later. And so we had to sit through 6 hours of rain, snow, hail, sideways wind, sheltering underneath the tarp, and in the exact same spot that Scott had missed that bear, right at 5 o'clock, this blonde popped out and Scott was able to capitalize. And that was a pretty cool moment, being able to, you know, coming back from the mist, dealing with weather all day long, and really our own education. I mean, we've learned that, you know, we pack a tarp now in the spring because it sucks just sitting out in the rain for 6 hours. So we bring a tarp, and that's made things, you know, you learn, you get smarter, not, you know, and that was a pretty cool moment, and killing that bear. So.
No, that's awesome. And it's, you know, there's nothing, like I said, that's got to be the most tough aspect of, I guess, developing mental toughness is dealing with those failures. But there's nothing more satisfying than to come back from, you know, weather's one thing, like I said, you know, not seeing animals is one thing. That's really satisfying to come out of a situation like that. But when you miss an animal, when you, you know, you spook something, whatever it is, coming out of that and being successful is got to be, I mean, it's the most satisfying thing in the world, I feel like.
Oh, it's redemption a little bit.
Yeah, that whole experience was, I mean, it was a really triumphant moment for us to start that hunt. Travis didn't really touch on this. We'd hunted this unit a few times, but the area that we went into, we had never hunted before. We'd never even looked at it because we had the other side down pretty well, and seen a lot of animals in there, but the snow held on really long, and so we couldn't access it at all. It was still full on winter up there, so we went into this area totally blind and ended up killing two bears in 48 hours.
That's amazing, man. Especially with the bears, man. That's such a. I want a bear so stinking bad. That's one thing that before I had even ever started hunting, I remember looking up, I've told this story before, looking up regs and thinking to myself like, holy crap, man, hunting a bear. That's like the epitome of being a dude right there, you know, bear hunting. So I've been out. I've had multiple bear tags. I've only ever legitimately gone bear hunting once. I had also had one on my elk hunt. I'm not sure if that really counts, but yeah, no, but that's awesome. And I love hearing about those successes. So what else can someone picking up the book, what else can they expect as they go through and start reading the story about y'all? I see here, where is it in the, I also love this part. I'm going to enjoy reading this, but I definitely love the author's note. Hard work, whiskey, wine, failure, success, failure, harder work, fun, mental highs, brotherhood, lows, weather, injuries, rabbits, whiskey, real, bad decisions. What can we expect going into the Team Bad Decision book?
Well, we've had there's quite a bit of humor in there too, and it's some of it's self-deprecating. but we found ourselves in a lot of situations that are what the definition of almost the definition of type 2 fun, right? It didn't seem very fun at the time, but seemed pretty awesome in retrospect. And a lot of those situations didn't need to be as hard as they ended up being. I popped Scott's pad on 15 minutes into our Colorado elk hunt. I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, so, I mean, like, you know, sometimes we make things tougher on ourselves, and that whole scene, I try to do a pretty good job of laying that scene out in the book because it was pretty comical.
Was it now?
for me.
Now, so here's the question. After he pops your pad, did he volunteer his pad? That's the big question.
So here's the worst. He did. Here's the worst part about it, though. So this is 2014. So I had the brand new Big Agnes Q-Core SL. Oh. Big, nice, thick, quilted jobby. And he's still running a Therm-a-Rest trail light or some little.
He's like, no.
Little thick, he's like, I'm tiny good. Foam pad.
I'm like, here's mine.
Here you go. I got this. It was wrapped around my Amazon package. Enjoy sleeping on it.
Seriously.
but you know, luckily you had an extra pad in the truck, so eventually it got, you know, a couple days later we did a big loop and ended up back at the
five
truck
5 days later
and swapped it out, but but there's little nuggets of humor like that sprinkled throughout, and
it's, you know, it contains a lot of the little incidental stories that if you're a guy that's gone on, or a gal too, that's gone on, you know, week long hunts with friends, it contains a lot of those little strange kind of novelty stories that rarely get communicated but are greatly enjoyed.
Those are the best stories because, one, everybody identifies with them. Maybe not the exact story, but whether it's the mindset or you just know someone that would do some shit like that, like,
exactly.
I mean, you know, you guys talk about hunting Colorado, and this last year was weird as hell in Colorado. I'm with you on that because I did a backcountry hunt and that was supposed to be total, you know, war zone with elk, and yeah, we saw three cows the entire time, maybe a bull. I'm still not convinced. But we're back there, you know, I'm back there with my buddy Kelvin, and we're at the point of the hunt where it's getting a little like, you know, we're getting a little crazy because we haven't really seen much, and it'll be hot and then it'll be freezing and it'll, you know, who knows what's going on. And at one point we're walking back to get, you know, have an actual meal, and we weren't seeing anything. And we're like, okay, we're going to go check out this clearing. So we get to this clearing, nothing there. We walk out into the middle of it. And he's like, hey, I'm like, draws back and like, hey, I'm going to shoot this arrow up in the, just straight up in the air. And I'm like, ha ha ha, really funny. And he pulls back and looses the damn arrow straight up. And of course, like, I'm in immediate panic mode. I don't think like, okay, there's no way it's going to come directly straight down. So the safest spot is to stay exactly where I am. No, I go tearing off the other direction that I think like, okay, the arrow's not going anywhere this way. So I go running. All of a sudden, I'm kind of looking back at him, and he looks at me like, oh, he's panicking. I should probably panic too. This was a really dumb idea. He comes tearing off after me, and suddenly we're standing there like, hey, oh, that was really, really funny. Thinking like, okay, the arrow's already hit somewhere way over in the other direction. We hear that damn thing land. It couldn't be like more than 7 to 10 feet from us, the direction we were running. And it was a little more extreme maybe than most stories, but those are the best stories that you probably shouldn't admit to, but you get a beer, you know, you sit down for a beer with your buddies and all of those come out. Those are the absolute best ones. And so I am excited to catch some of the,
you guys almost won the Einstein Award this year, right? Or the Darwin Award.
Oh, no. Just tell me the story and I'm terrified for you.
I was looking, I'm like, what is wrong with you? And he was grinning.
A lot, man.
Oh, man, that hunt. That was an interesting hunt. But so.
Yeah, we always say gets weird on day three. Ooh. So
that is, you know what? That is 100% true. 100% true. From my limited experience, you know, day three is when stuff starts getting real weird.
Yeah.
Well, the strangest part about it is after you hunt with a guy for a long time, you can get that weird just on the drive there. And that's kind of terrifying.
The bar starts getting lower and lower and lower from where you start. Oh, man. Well, so coming into this, you know, and maybe this is it is a little different than the question I asked before, but how have you guys personally changed from, you know, the start of this journey you detail in the book to now? What are some of the biggest changes you guys have seen in each other, seen in yourselves maybe? We're getting deep here.
It sounds super cliche, but backpacking has changed my life. Like, I look around at the possessions and I'm like, why do I need all this stuff? Like, I am so content. I'm the happiest I am all year long with nothing that I can't stuff in the backpack on my back.
No, I totally get that. And this is my shower thought all the time. Like, my brilliant thought in the shower is after I come back from a hunt, I'm standing there in the shower. You know, I've been, like you said, living out of a backpack for so long. And I'm like, why do I need all this? You know, what does this, you know, how does this serve me? How does this make me happy? And sometimes then though, I also realize I'm like, how happy would I be if I lived 24/7 in that tent? It's kind of, I feel like the misery, it's when you're comfortable and you look back on the misery, that's when you realize how happy you were. It's not always, and it's sometimes in the moment, not always, that you're like, that was the happiest moment of my life. You're like, actually, at that second, that was the most miserable moment of my life. And
Very accurate.
I would have murdered someone for a Coke and a shower.
Yeah, I would say I've had some of the backpack hunting in particular has given both ends of that spectrum for me too. Like, I've been, like I said, I've been exceptionally happy and I have been exceptionally miserable. And in fact, I wouldn't say I've been the happiest in my life on a backpacking hunt, but I have probably been the most miserable in my life on a backpacking hunt. And and that was during a moment of triumph and success too. You know, while I was listening to Scott there, I was kind of trying to think about my answer to that too. And it's funny because since we started backpack hunting in 2013, it's kind of taken over. I mean, it's my only real hobby besides writing, I suppose. But but so many other life events have happened since then. And it's cool that to me, like, I've actually got an article I've been working on and it's coming out pretty soon. It's associated with Father's Day, and I know this is going to release way after that, but it kind of made me realize
But I wish I would have started doing this earlier. I mean, we started backpack hunting late. I was 26 years old when I started backpack hunting. And it's cool to me that I've got two kids that both my kids have been born, obviously since we started backpack hunting. And it's cool to me that those two, and then Scott's got a new daughter, and hopefully she gets into hunting as well if mom lets her out the front door. And they're going to get to experience that their whole life. And they get to kind of build on what we've kind of started, and hopefully we can teach them the lessons. And that's kind of, it's kind of been where my thoughts have started to, I don't know if I'd say focus, but more redirect lately on kind of what we're doing is we're kind of preparing the way for our kids to experience something that, that we kind of came to and something that we're super passionate about. And that's a really cool thing to think about, and hopefully they like to do it. I mean, obviously can't force them to like it, but both my kids have a good start. They're both pretty into hunting. My youngest was running around before we left for our bear hunt with my binoculars looking for bears, and he wears his boots all the time. Like, it's the middle of summer. It was 90 degrees today, and he's wearing his boots outside because he says when he wears his boots, he's hunting. And so that's pretty cool. So yeah.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Now that's something I always, I look back and same kind of thing, I think, a lot of people use the term the adult onset hunter, and I look back and I wish I had had that experience when I was younger and, but it wasn't meant to be, and I wouldn't be the person I am without that. I wouldn't have the experiences, and I wouldn't come at it with the perspective that I do if I hadn't had the life I had. But I am excited, if that's ever going to be in the future for me, if I'm ever going to have kids, I am so stoked to be able to introduce them to the outdoors and hunting and that lifestyle from day one, I love sharing that with my nephews. I love sharing that with my friends. The ability to really raise someone in that environment is super exciting to me. I don't know what it is about that, but being able to share your passion, I think that's a lot of what it is, everyone wants to share their passion, and to really be able to see that in someone else, as they grow up in it is an amazing thing. I think.
Nah, I'm totally on board.
So if somebody came up to you guys and was like, oh my gosh, I read the book, I'm really inspired by what you guys have done, and I want to take my chance, in the backcountry, or I want to go out hunting and get into the outdoors, but I don't have any background in it. I don't know if I have the resources to do this. There's a lot going on here. I don't feel comfortable doing this. What would you say to that person?
This is Scott's talked about this multiple times. I'll let him take this one. So,
I had a conversation this with a longtime friend pretty recently about this. And I suggested that he learn to hunt and learn to backpack and kind of get comfortable with both of them and find a little success with both of them before mixing the two. That would be my advice. Because if you can hunt in an area that's going to give you multiple opportunities per season to learn lessons on all your failed attempts, you're going to learn so much faster. And that's just very unlikely to happen in the backcountry.
No, it's, that is a huge lesson. And you know, I've always been one of those people to where I'm not like the start slowly and build up to something. I'm like that. I want to do that. So I'm going to go do it. Like,
yeah.
I've always been in that mindset. And, you know, that's something that is honestly, for the most part, has served me well. But with hunting, it has, it's been tough. It's been real tough. I mean, you know, I don't know how much of my history you guys know, but my first real hunt, like, you know, I'd sat in a tree stand once or twice and I'd walked around, you know, pretending like I was looking for deer. I didn't know what I was doing. But my first real hunt that was an over-the-counter solo DIY archery elk hunt. Like, I'm just like, I've never done this before. I'm going to bomb out to Idaho with my bow and try and shoot an elk, you know, miles from a road. It's suffice to say there was some issues with that. You know, I will also admit I learned more from that trip than I have ever learned from any successful trip I've had. And, you know, I would not trade that experience for anything. Albeit I'd prefer not to have torn my knees on that trip, but that's a whole other story for those who have listened to that podcast. But you know, it's definitely a lesson I've learned. And if I was to do it again, I would probably go out on maybe a duck hunt or something, or a, you know, find some buddies to take me out on a hog hunt, with a rifle before I decide to go chase elk miles from a road in, you know, well, knee deep snow in Idaho. But
on the contrary though, I mean, I'm assuming it didn't scare you away from hunting, right?
It did not. But I mean, you know, pat myself on the back here. I like to think I'm a bit of a rare breed. I think a lot of people that are more tentative, I'm one of those people, like I said, I am the type of person that will jump into something with both feet and hammer at it until it works. Like, until it works either by I develop enough skill or I just get lucky enough for something to happen, I will be that guy that I will just keep hammering away. And that's always been my personality. Regardless of how frustrated I get, how much I'm kicking myself, how down I get about it. But I know not everyone's like that. You know, and there may be some people that, bringing it around to what the first thing we talked about, you know, some people come in and if all they see is, you know, somebody going out and walking through the woods in Wyoming, and they, you know, all of a sudden a bull pops out and they shoot it at 20 yards and bada bing, bada boom, they're packing it out, and they're not able to do that. They, you know, they may feel like there's something wrong. I saw that and I was kind of like, I knew enough to not expect it to be that easy, but I didn't expect it to turn out like it did. And, I know not everyone is going to be at that point where they're able to face failure after failure after failure. And that's just how we're built as people. I feel like, you know, you need a little bit of that success and that, you know, you need a little bit of that sweetness to be able to counteract all the bitter.
I think it's so hard with hunting too, because like if you go multiple seasons without even seeing a legal animal or one that's, you know, not in range, that's hard. You know, if you're blowing opportunities and it's something that you need to hone your skills for, that's one thing. Like you can work on that. But if you're in an area where you're not even getting opportunities, that's really hard for people to keep, you know, spending their money and taking their vacation time and all that.
Especially going out of state where it's not cheap. I mean, you know,
it's one thing. Yeah. If you're cruising an hour down the road and you're spending, you know, whatever, $50 on your license and, you know, $25 on a tag or something, you know, for some places that's pretty damn pricey. But, you know, it's one thing if you're just cruising down the road and you're like, okay, I haven't seen anything this whole time, but whatever, that's, you know, $75 and, you know, a couple hours or, you know, a day out of my year versus like, okay, I've got to sacrifice a week of my vacation time that takes me, you know, over a year to build. I got to sacrifice, you know, I mean, depending on where you're hunting, you know, anywhere from hundreds to thousands of dollars to get a tag, get a license and get out there. I mean, I've invested, there's a lot more gear involved when you're going backcountry. I mean, it can be pretty heartbreaking when you don't see success ever. And it's enough to turn people away. And I'm not the one to try and scare anyone away. I'm like, you know what? You want to go on a backcountry elk hunt? I'll advise you to try some stuff before that. But if that's what you want to do, I will do everything in my power to make sure, you know, you're successful. I love that kind of drive, but also don't let it drive you away from hunting if you're not successful.
I feel like we all have that in common. Us right here.
When you guys say that, I mean, I maybe it's because it's fresh in our mind, but you know, I think about our bear hunt we just got back on, and we ended up seeing 9 bears. We saw 5 adults and 4 cubs, and we never had an opportunity at a legal bear. It was a lot of sows and cubs running around, and the boars we saw were not gettable. They were out of range and we're not able to close any distance, but that trip, I mean, I laughed until I cried for 4 days straight. I mean, and there's so many other things that make up a hunt that we don't talk about. I mean, that doesn't get shoved in social media, because I mean, now, let's be honest. A lot of this stuff is inside jokes. Like if I told you some of the stories that made me laugh till I cried, you'd stare at me like I was an idiot. But if you were there, you would have been, you know, but everybody's got those experiences when they go hunting, and that's the kind of stuff I think should become more of the, and I shouldn't say should become the focus of the hunt, because we all like being successful. We all like killing animals while we're out there, and that's a lot of fun too. But there's so many moving pieces that happen on a hunt that make it worthwhile. That sometimes I think we get lost in focusing on that, on notching that tag, and we lose focus on other things that make it worthwhile. And I mean, we're everybody's guilty of it on occasion. And, but I don't know, we had a great time in Idaho and we didn't kill anything.
You know, it comes down to what you want to get out of the hunt. If all you want to get out of the hunt, you know, I've talked about it as called it measures of success before, but if all you want to get out of the hunt is a dead animal, then you've got probably better choices. You know, you've got to make choices that will result in that. If what you want to get out of a hunt is camaraderie or the experience or, you know, any of 100 things, you know, I'm sure. Okay. So here's another question that I get asked all the time, and I've never asked anyone else before. What's your response when somebody comes to you and says, we've all gotten asked this question. Well, you know, do you hunt just for the trophy or do you hunt for meat? And it's like,
yes.
Loaded question.
I actually write about this a little bit in the book. You know, I feel sometimes that hunters, and I don't know if it's an image portrayal issue or whatever, but you know, I see everybody, there's been a movement. I've seen this happen a lot more, and I am guilty. I have done the exact picture I'm about to talk about, where they're holding up the backstrap and they put their little hashtag, like why we do it or whatever, you know, whatever their mantra is. And it's like, no, that's not why you do it. If it was for the meat, you'd go down to the grocery store and you'd pay. I mean, if I told my wife how much it cost per pound for me to bring home meat, based on everything I've spent, she would come unglued, right? You know, I mean, and that's the same for all of us. And it's okay to want to be, to like hunting and to enjoy the process of the hunt and get a thrill out of chasing an animal and, you know, basically, defeating it in its own territory. And that's okay to enjoy that part of it. I mean, the meat is a fantastic secondary item, but
it's okay to like both. It's okay to like the trophy aspect of it, and it's okay to like meat, and it's okay to like everything else in between. And I just sometimes it bothers me sometimes that we don't get pushed on one way or the other. But
no, it's such a loaded question, and typically when I get asked that, my response is, how long do you have to talk right now? Because this is not this is not a binary like yes or no question here. We're gonna have a very long discussion. We're gonna talk about what trophy hunting is. We're gonna talk about what meat hunting is. We're gonna talk about the adventure. We're gonna talk about the prep. You are gonna hate me after this conversation, or you're gonna love me. But
so this last year when I was in Montana, I was in between changing areas, and so I was driving at night, so I decided to stop in town, grab myself a burger, a couple beers, and I sat down. I was talking with this old timer, and he's like, where are you from? And I told him, I'd come from out of state, and he was like, well, you've been seeing anything? And I'd seen a couple good bucks the day before, so I showed him a couple phone scope videos. He goes, I just don't know why everyone's hung up on shooting all these big old rutted stinky bucks. I shot myself a real nice doe this morning, and I know she's going to be tender, and she was close to the road, and I just don't get it. And I was like, well, for me, there's something to be said about the matching of the wits, and trying to outsmart a mature animal, and I love that portion of it, but his viewpoint on it was just—it was so profound to me that we do get caught up in this, and it was refreshing to hear him so excited about shooting a nice fat doe that was real close to the road.
Well, it's—I
can get behind.
Oh yeah,
to be honest.
Well, I'll tell you, my deer this year was teeny.
Him and all his friends. They were
gonna... My deer this year, I'm looking at it now. It's a little. It's right above my laptop here. It's a little velvet. Spike, it may be big enough to have a crab claw if it wasn't in velvet, but that was the damn tastiest buck in the world, and I'm so proud of that thing. But I think so much of it is not even the perspective of like, oh, this buck's gonna be tastier, but it is all this feeling of like, sometimes we do feel like we have to be chasing something bigger. Like, not that it's not okay to shoot a smaller buck, but it's not okay to chase a smaller buck. Does that, or a doe or whatever that is, if that makes sense. And I think, it's okay to be excited about just, wanting that doe, wanting that buck, whatever it is. I think it's definitely a shift in mindset.
Well, kind of circling back to your question about, advising a new hunter wanting to get into it. That's one of the very first things that I ask them is what is going to be a successful hunt to you? Is like shooting an animal with a rifle or a bow? Is either of that important to you? Is a doe, an archery doe, is that going to be successful, or a rifle doe, or a rifle cow? There's some LISB tags that are around that can provide some really good opportunity if that's going to feel like a success for somebody. So kind of trying to figure out if they just want to, if they just want to have a successful hunt and kill something, like identifying that early on is a key to success.
Oh, without a doubt.
Well, and I think too, it's important. And I know I've probably mentioned this a couple of times. I kind of get focused on it 'cause it's kind of a pet peeve of mine, but social media has increased everybody's idea of what a trophy is and what they should be proud of. I mean, I was on I had a Drate whitetail hunt last year and I killed I missed a dandy buck. And then I ended up, my wife was kind of irritated. I think that I missed a deer. She wanted me home and it was a front country hunt. Like I had my trailer and I was drinking, going back to a heated trailer in November and drinking whiskey every night. And I had an opportunity at a little basket 3-point that next day and I shot it. And it wasn't 20 minutes after I posted my first picture on my Facebook that I got a text message from somebody saying, not congratulations, but hey, why didn't you hold out for a bigger deer? And it's interesting to me that,
people need to not get caught up in that trap, and people need to make their own expectations and live to their own values and not what the internet says you should be. You should never, I mean, I see people, you know, they always preface their picture. Ah, he's not the biggest buck in the world, but here's my buck. It's like, nah, screw that, man. Like, you went out and killed that deer and be proud of it. You know, I think that's an important mindset for people to maintain.
No, I honestly, I've had that discussion before with people about, like, you know, oh, you know, I know this, you know, he's not very bad. Like, to some extent, I do understand prefacing that, because you do want to say, you're like, hey, yeah, he doesn't have a big, like, you're trying to make that point where you don't want to do that. But I feel like almost calling it out makes it worse. But yeah, I remember posting about my buck, and I had some dude that was like super butthurt that I had unfollowed him on Instagram, and he started trying to talk a bunch of shit. It was kind of amazing, because he kept getting really, really, really angry with me because I kept sharing all the messages he would send me and tag him. Anyway, but yeah, like, I just remember, you know, thinking to myself, I'm like, I legitimately, and the way I ended up phrasing it was, I could go out and today and shoot, you know, a 4-point that's tall and wide and just beautiful, and I would not be nearly as proud of that deer as I am of this spike I have right here. You know, and it was the truth. Like, I remember, I always wondered for myself, like, when I, you know, because I was very unsuccessful for a long time coming up to this, and I remember going out with my buddies in Arizona, and I was wondering, I'm like, you know, what will my mindset be? I like to think, like, you know, I'm going to be willing to take my first animal, whatever it is, and this and that. I wasn't sure. Like, I'm like, I think this is how I'm going to be. But you know, when the rubber meets the road and you're having to decide whether or not to draw on a buck, and you're like, okay, well, it's a button buck or it's a spike or something. Do I really want to shoot this? You know, who knows what decision you're actually going to make. And I remember the first stalk I ever put on a deer, you know, it was actually, there was a button buck and there was a spike, or no, it was a button buck and a forky, I think. And I go in and, you know, I'm with my buddy Mason down in Arizona, and we're putting this stalk on this deer, and we get in, and he's like, well, he's like, okay, the spike's over here, it's through this thing, you know, and we're kind of gauging whether or not I can make the shot through the trees. And I'm like, I don't feel comfortable making that shot. And he's like, well, this other one's just a button buck. I'm like, I want that buck. I'm like, I don't care. And I was patting myself on the back right now, but like, I was just happy with myself that to some extent that I'm like, I'm just passionate about what we're doing right here and in the moment. You know, it doesn't matter to me whether or not it's a spike, a fork, a button buck, or a 4-point. And I mean, don't get me wrong, if there's a 4-point and a button buck standing right next to each other, I'm taking the 4-point. But, you know, especially for my first deer, I've got it hanging right above my laptop in like the place of honor, you know, and it's never going to move. It is always going to hold the place of honor in my mind, in my very sparse trophy room, you know, whatever it is. But
whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way, with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why Midway USA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
So if people want to check out the Team Bad Decision book, learn all about the stories, catch all of the failures, all of the successes, I'm holding this up as if people can see it, and they can't right now. But if people want to buy the book, where can they check it out?
So the paperback version is only sold through my website, and that's www.teambaddecision.com.
And then you can find the ebook on Amazon, iTunes, Barnes and Noble, all the big major retailers. It's available there.
Fantastic. And if people want to follow along with all the shenanigans on online, where can they check you guys out?
We got both the Facebook and Instagram. Our Instagram is at @ST_TeamBadDecision. And then our Facebook group is facebook.com/TeamBadDecisionBook. And shenanigans is right. We've been releasing slowly the videos from our Idaho Bear trip. And Scott and I think we are significantly funnier than our compatriots do. But there's still some more videos to come. So
hashtag Travis Attenborough.
Oh, dear. awesome. Is there anything we didn't talk about? Anything about the book? Anything about y'all's story that you guys really want to share, want to cover?
I'll just say we've had some some really positive feedback coming in so far from people that we're not related to. You know, both our moms like the book, but people other than
you know, you're speaking to my soul here once again. I always joke, and I've talked about it on the podcast before. My mom is my biggest fan of this podcast. She shares every single episode. I actually just posted a video of her. I walked into the house one day, and I'm like listening, and I thought I heard something from the other room. Then all of a sudden I realized I was hearing my own voice coming from the other room. And she's like walking around with her phone, listening to the latest episode of the podcast. So she's the first person to share
every
single episode, yeah. But yeah, no. And I do have to give a huge shout out to Brittany Prosser for introducing all of us. She is a good friend, and I know she is a huge fan of you guys. She's the one that introduced me to the two of y'all. And so big shout out to Brittany. She is absolutely a rock star. So thank you, Brittany, for making the introduction. I guarantee she will be listening to this one. I got a couple of messages from her the second I mentioned that we were hopping on tonight. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you so much for hopping on. I'll make sure to post links to everything up on the show notes page. But appreciate it.
No, man, thanks for having us on. That was great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
All right, y'all, that'll do it for episode 105 of Living Country in the City. Make sure y'all check out the show notes page at livingcountryinthecity.com/105. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. Also, y'all, Team Bad Decision is going to be doing a book giveaway. So head on over to their Instagram page, give them a like, give them a follow, and keep an eye out for that post to win a copy of their book. But in the meantime, keep it country, y'all.
Thank y'all for listening to Living Country in the City. Get show notes and check out the blog, product reviews, events, and more at livingcountryinthecity.com.